the Lately in JavaScript podcast. Well, this is an experimental new thing, and as you may see, I have here with me Michael Kimsel, now live, and for his female fans, they can all faint.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Oh yeah.
Well, this is episode 18, and as I was saying, this is something experimental. We are starting to use this Google Hangouts thing. Actually, this is a bit different than the regular Google Hangouts because it allows the recording to be transmitted live and also be recorded on the server side, so I do not have to take care of the actual recording. Just pray that it will work, and later the video will be available for minor editing and be published in the JS Classes site podcast. So moving on to the actual podcast, I did not say the usual. Hello, Michael. How are you doing?
I am too legit to quit. Okay, that's people of a certain age.
That was cool.
People of a certain age will fervently deny that they have any idea what that's referencing, but I know that they know.
It looked cool. That's what matters.
Oh yeah. What can I say?
Yeah, nothing. You already said it.
I did.
Well, anyway, let's move on. I'm having here two computers, one to see the timeline and the other to do the actual recording. So as I can see in the timeline, we're going to start precisely talking a bit about this Google Hangouts thing. Not only we can record the video and people can watch it live, and eventually whoever is interested can participate. Actually, I sent some invitations, but then I realized that Google is not sending the invitations out to anybody, so I don't know if they see them, the invitations by email or in their notifications.
I'm going to try to send out something right now, just trying out.
Yeah, your millions of fans will pop up in a moment. Also, this is probably not a very good hour of the day for at least part of the world. It's probably already asleep. But, well, okay, this is still very, very beta, but we are going to move on and talk with the regular interesting JavaScript-related topics. And the one that I wanted to talk about first is about precisely the Google Hangouts facility that is well integrated in Google+. Well, Google does not like to call it a social network, but I think that's what it is. Anyway, they also provide an API that you can use some HTML and JavaScript to integrate in your site. I never tried it. Michael, did you look into this or even tried it to do?
I've not tried it yet. The whole thing is kind of neat. It just feels a bit rough, and frankly, yeah. I've got too much on my plate to mess around with beta APIs. I'm assuming they're beta because it's Google in the name. It's neat, and I'm going to let somebody else be the early adopter for the most part. That said, I'm on a public Hangout right now, which is not the first. We're not the first people to do this, certainly, but it's still a little early, a little rough around the edges.
Yeah.
I do very talk about hands a lot sometimes, so you'll notice.
Well, we did a test yesterday, and somehow it worked, but there are several things that I wanted to do. I was not able. Anyway, I just wanted to bring up the fact that they provide an API, because that API allows you to probably do things more sophisticated and well integrated in your sites. I did not look into it with great detail, but that's what it looks like. It can be used to do. I think there are two options. One, to integrate it as a Google gadget, which is probably simpler for most people because it's just a bunch of HTML. There's also some control to do it with JavaScript. Well, anyway, we will publish the link to the actual Hangouts API page. So whoever is interested may want to take a look. And I think that's the most important things about this API that I can think about to say now.
Sure.
So moving on with our podcast, the next topic that I thought about talking about is this Node Natural, which is basically a framework for natural language processing. At first it looked sophisticated.
Well,
at least it suggests it could be some sophisticated thing.
Let's do a timeout here, because when you say natural language processing, my initial thought, though I'm familiar with the term, but my initial thought went to actual sound processing, like my dog has fleas, and it would parse out, my dog has fleas, and sing it. This is a text processing library, correct? Mm-hmm. This isn't anything to do with sound specifically.
Yeah. Well, you stop because we have our first guest.
No, goodness. Hello? I just see a black square there right now. Maybe there's...
Oh, hello. It seems to be somebody from a well-known family. But probably... Are your microphone is mute?
Yeah, it was. Is it on now?
Oh, my goodness. That's my oh, my gosh. Thanks for interrupting in the dark.
Well, you were not recognizing my mic.
Yeah, he looks better with the lights off most of the time.
Yeah, well, for whoever is going to do this transcription, just a note that we stopped talking because a guest entered in the chat room. I'm
guests.
Not sure if they will follow the audio or the video when they do this transcription. But I think it worked, Michael. You sent out some invitations to some guests, and they are arriving.
Yes, I have that effect. Notice it's all men coming in. There's no women. Whoever has their mark, that maybe if you have audio going live, please maybe turn that down or use headphones or something. But moving back to the natural node language. Wow, that's bad.
It is showing me a link to deactivate the audio.
Yeah, I just muted a couple people. I just muted some. Oh, and Jose, I think, left. Jose, if you're watching later, sorry, you just had a lot of background noise. Natural node.
Okay, back to the topic.
Yeah, this is one of these. I was mentioning before, this is not it doesn't deal with sound. It's just for natural language text processing. And I'm assuming it's primarily English. Most of the libraries that I've seen have to do with, it even says here, most of these algorithms are English specific right now.
Yeah. Well, it looked to me it just do very basic things. It did not seem to do any actual grammar recognition or something like that. Just splitting text in words, probably find similar sounding words, and that was it. But anyway, probably this is just one of the first releases, and it will probably evolve into something more sophisticated. Well, I hope, because that's what originally it suggested to me, to be something not exactly to recognize audio, words in audio, but at least process some written text and maybe reckon some phrase structure or something like that.
Sure. But it does look like there are... I'm trying to see the time element on this. The network graph certainly didn't show that right away, but there's 46 forks of this, and there's 700-something people watching. It looks like this has been going on for at least a year, so definitely a moderately active project. It's had spurts of activity.
Well, but does fork mean that actually the people changed the code, or they just checked it out and...
Well,
thought about changing it, but they did not necessarily do it.
Well, the hard fork is somebody did an actual hard fork instead of just checking it out. Because I can check it out without doing a fork. So 46 other people made forks of it, and I'm assuming they did that because they were going to make some changes at some point. A lot of people do fork stuff. I occasionally fork things and maybe just push one thing back, or I don't push anything back. But something that has generated 46 forks on GitHub to me is it's a moderately large project.
Well, we'll see. If we get more news about any interesting progress about this library, I'm sure we will get back to it.
And I'm watching it, so I should get something in my stream if anything happens.
Yeah. Well, but moving on with the podcast, the next topic I wanted to comment about is about a new, well, actually, probably is not new, but it was new to me, which is a way to port code in C and C++ to JavaScript using the M scripting language. And it was actually interesting because the I saw an article, I'll post the link in the show notes, that demonstrates how to do some XML parsing that will probably be processor heavy operation to do, and they took some C code and converted it to JavaScript. Michael, did you check this?
Well, I read about it, but I'm not a C or C++ person, so the practical implications of it for me aren't all that much.
Probably it will be more useful to people that do not want to deal or even learn C. They can take advantage of the existing C libraries and convert them to...
Yes, I mean, it feels academic to me, and I don't know, again, there may be a lot of potentially great use cases for this, but I guess the two things strike me. One is that somebody doing JavaScript would have to know that a particular C library exists and matches their needs. And secondly, they would have to be aware of this project. And thirdly, they would have to... The porting would have to be accurate enough that it wouldn't introduce any bugs, and that somebody could just take it and convert it and drop it in.
Yeah.
And this is less about this particular project and more about just the idea of code reuse. So often, 20-something, 30-something years, code reuse, code reuse, code reuse, and people still write something from scratch because... You know, even though there are libraries out there, people still write things from scratch because they don't understand the other stuff, or they don't have time to learn it, most of the excuses are not valid, but they still do that. So I guess I'm still thinking about what the practical implications of this are. Now, it could be that somebody takes a lot of common C libraries and shepherds the porting of them to JavaScript and ensures that they work properly and does the modifications necessary and maintains them. If there was a person or a group of people that did that and curated them, that would be a great benefit, but that takes a lot of extra work.
Well, maybe not. The way I figure this works is that they use the they compile the C and C++ code into LLVM bytecode, and then they convert, they use the MScripten or LLVM tools to generate JavaScript from them, from the LLVM assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it works. And it has shown to be something that works in practice. In the case of the article that I seen, I'll post a link later, they ported a tool called XML Lint, which is basically to analyze some XML code to figure any syntax problems. And this also ties to the next topic that I want to comment about, which is the SQLJS, which is basically an implementation of the SQLite library totally in JavaScript. And it was ported from C to JavaScript exactly the same way using MScripten to convert it to LLVM assembly or bytecode or whatever is it called, and then back to JavaScript. I don't know if it still needed some touches to be done manually to finalize the result to make it useful, because if the original code is in C and C is not object oriented, is not object based at all. All day the end did it end in with a JavaScript library that actually works in object based, because all JavaScript is object based. Well, I'm not sure how did it work. I confess I did not try it, but it seemed interesting, the idea.
Yes, these are interesting, and as are a lot of things, and I don't get to play with as much as I'd like. But if this is the testing ground for kind of the next generation of cool stuff. You know, great. I'm really happy to have people do those sorts of things and be those pioneers, because I'm not good enough to do it.
Well, maybe...
No, thank you. I'm not.
You do not have the time or feel the need right now, but at least you can know that there is this process now, and it's viable. It has been proven to be usable on a certain cases, and in case you sometime later figure you have a library that you'd like very much to have in JavaScript, but it is only available in some other language, because I think this is not specifically limited to C or C++. Anything that can be compiled to LLVM code can be.
You could translate it then, or it could. Yeah, that, if that's the intermediate step, then you can go one step further. And convert it over. And if you go back to that original article you pointed to, someone pointed out that yes, this works, but loading all of this stuff into the browser, in his words, brought Firebug to its knees. And it was not a apparently not a huge library. So. As with anything native or something written specifically for your platform versus something converted, you have to weigh that benefit of, can I convert this? That's great that you can do it. I can do this in proof of concept, or I can do this and I can deal with the heaviness or the bulkiness, whatever it may be, if there are cases where that is happening. If you're aware of the trade-off and you intentionally make it, that's great. If you're not really aware of that trade-off that's going on and you just do this blindly, you will end up with really slow, bloated stuff. And on top of that, it's stuff that you probably can't go in and easily fix or debug. It may be easier just to build what you need from scratch, but then you're getting into reinventing the wheel.
Beginning for a subsequent effort to optimize the result, maybe do rewrite part of the code to make it more efficient when it runs in JavaScript.
But we all know that the first version never gets rewritten. roughly speaking.
Well, it depends.
Excuse me.
Well, okay. Well, this is basically just one idea that other people may be interested to investigate. The project they presented having a JavaScript pure JavaScript implementation with the SQLite library may or may not be interesting. At least you can rely on some code that you provide, and you do not depend on the browser to implement a SQL-based interface or something that you want to implement.
I think so it is, ultimately, it is a really interesting way of getting the functionality of some of those C libraries without having to compile them into browser extensions and try to distribute things that way, or to write native code and try to distribute it that way. If you can deal with whatever resulting performance hit there may be, and you're focusing more on the functionality, that technique is attractive, I think, to get things into JavaScript, because that becomes the ultimate delivery point, or I should say delivery mechanism for application code, is the browser. I've got some old VB app, and if I could convert most of that into JavaScript, those libraries, re-glue them together and put it out, I could port old logic code and redistribute it in a new form much, much faster than rebuilding it all from scratch. And that's just one thing that springs to mind. So kind of discounting some of the, well, native versus code first versus rebuild and all that, the idea of JavaScript being the language of the browser and the browser being the primary way that applications are distributed, app stores notwithstanding, this technique probably can open up a lot of interesting explorations and paths that, again, certainly I wouldn't have thought of. Even I don't think I would have ever thought specifically of, hey, this C code, I should just port it to JavaScript so that I can have it in the browser. It would not have occurred to me.
Well, it's a tool. Whoever finds it interesting will figure out maybe some very much more interesting purpose than those that we mentioned of these projects. This XML linked, and then the other one, which is SQLite port. And okay, we'll see. Now, moving on with our podcast, we're talking about actually bringing back one subject. You, Michael, have shown some concern in the past, and it seems somebody found, I'm not sure if this is a solution or Or it's more just solidarity
yeah.
article saying, I feel your pain,
yeah.
which is the dealing with the dates and the different ways, different browsers,
dates,
format them
yeah.
and pass them to the server.
Dates in JSON. And this was what you're going to post, I guess, with the notes here is a blog post from Scott Hanselman of Hanselman and Microsoft. And he posted some blog article. I'm not sure what the date was. I saw it probably 2 months ago when I was looking for date stuff. And he basically outlined some of the same problems that I talked to you about several months ago, probably January, yeah. I think. And interestingly enough, as kind of a recap of the problem that I had before, we had date objects or date values in Grails, and Grails has an option when you're generating JSON, it can convert those into JavaScript dates objects. So in your JSON, you get something like, you get a key that says created time, and the value is an expression. The value is new date, open parentheses, and then a Unix timestamp.
Mm.
Which gets interpreted by the browser. As soon as the browser gets it and creates a native object from it, it says, oh, I'm going to make the new a date with this thing, with this timestamp there. But it's looking at that timestamp and then converting it to whatever the local the time zone. So we had something that was a value that was going up at 10 o'clock or at midnight in one time zone, and then when someone else was looking at it, they would get the JSON, and it would say it would actually be 10 o'clock the day before. And when we would just say, give us the date for this, well, one date would be January 5th, and one date would be January 4th. We came up, and I say I did a lot of this, and some of the other guys on the team I was working on just beat our heads against this, and partially we were learning the code base, and we were learning where all the dead bodies were hidden, so to speak.
Mm.
A guy named John had, I'm trying to give some props here because I don't know if they want me to say their names or not, but Jason and John both had some ideas, and John's was actually more broadly applicable. And it's not perfect because we're still not dealing with time zones in our application, but what he did was very high in the stack chain. He actually overwrote part of the JSON serializer that was in our Java stack. I think basically is overwriting some of the either the Grails or the Java JSON writer. And so he takes and creates a string, creates the actual date string, so like 2012-04-07, and then the time, 15:00:00, makes that a string and sends that down, basically rewriting the JSON expression to say new date and then give a string. And all the browsers that we tested on, and which are the ones that we say we support, all would interpret that with their own time zone. So if I gave you a string that said April 15th, 3 p.m., it wouldn't matter what time zone your computer or your browser was in. It would say, okay, this is now 3 p.m. in my time zone, and it would treat it appropriately, more or less. Yes, it's a hack, but it was a very clever hack, I would say. And I actually mean that positively. Sometimes I say clever, and I'm trying to be rude. But it was probably the fastest way to get around that. Now, I don't remember Hanselman's post is in terms of how he got around or what his patch was for dealing with it with his problem. Do you remember offhand? Okay, maybe I should look this up.
No, not really. Did not go into much the detail about the solution. Well, I thought it was simpler than that because if you use the date object, it takes as parameter the Unix epoch number, which is absolute. It's always relative to the UTC time zone. But I was not aware of this variant that append a time zone offset in front.
Yeah.
And so I don't even know if this makes sense in JavaScript. I mean, the syntax of this appending plus some hours or minus some hours.
Well, another problem that we faced, I'll just share this. I've maybe said it before, but because I thought, well, the answer is we'll just do everything with time zones and just put throw time zones throughout the whole system and modify our systems. And every time you choose a date in the date picker thing, you'll just have to choose your time zone. And if we were limited to the web API, that might work. But we also had, or web interface, I should say, but we also have a moderate amount of data and a growing amount of data that's coming in through REST API calls. And to to force clients that are paying money to post data in and say you have to give us a time zone now. It's impossible to do that because some of these people are using old systems that don't have the time zones themselves. So it's a matter of we can't ever say that we're going to have 100% of these. We need to be able to deal with data that doesn't have time zone associated with it. It's an ugly problem, but it's one that we can't solve on our own because it's bigger than just our software. It's the software that we integrate with and we take data from. So it was a rather humbling experience. Technically, I know what the answer is. Practically, there is no good, clean answer, even after all these years
of
doing this kind
of
stuff.
Well, you have to deal with many cases. Well, somehow I had to deal with a similar situation recently. I'm still dealing with it, but it's in a completely different domain, which is the implementations of OAuth 2. Currently, I'm adding support for users of the JS Classes site and PHP Classes site to authenticate using their Facebook account or Google account or GitHub account, whatever. And I started adding first OAuth 2 support, but it seems that OAuth 2 is not a finished standard. And there are differences in the implementation of the parameters that go back and forth and the way that you pass state information to the authentication servers. And I developed a single class that somehow abstracts that and internally defines some parameters that say, oh, in this case, I would have to change it to pass the parameters this way. And then the responses. So the responses may come in form URL encoded or JSON, but in that case it's simpler because you can interpret the content type of the response of the server. Mm-hmm. But even for JSON, some servers return content type application / JSON or text / JavaScript.
Yeah.
Well, since I'm dealing with one OAuth server at a time, and I do not intend to support all OAuth servers there are out there in the world, my problem is sort of limited, but I had to figure this. And okay, I see what you mean. I had to deal it like a pirate, I suppose.
Pirate, yes.
And it's somehow similar, but I think it's a smaller problem than you have with the dates. And anyway, for those that wanted to investigate how this was solved, there is this article by Scott Enselman of Microsoft, and they can check it out and study it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they provide a definite solution for all cases, but probably it's a solution that covers many cases.
I think his solution does work in some cases. It wasn't going to work for our case because we didn't have. We really couldn't deal with time zones at all. But it's still a good read. There's a lot of good stuff in the comments, too.
Yeah. Well, I think the in worst cases, you find an unexpected date format that you treat it as something else and you insert incorrect data in your application on server.
Oh, yeah.
So in that case, maybe it's better to somehow throw an exception when finding some format you do not recognize instead of taking it as some apparently known format.
That was me throwing an exception, by the way. Just when you said it, I was kind of acting out. You said throw an exception.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if you could see it very well.
It will not appear in the transcription. But,
it won't, yeah.
Well, people will figure that they have to watch the video because it's more interesting.
They got to watch it. That was earlier. That was my Sarah Palin impersonation, which will only make sense to people of a certain age again. So.
Or maybe people that are following the American politics scene.
Who isn't?
It's probably not my case.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Left.
We
left
won't transcribe.
Right.
Don't transcribe that. Don't transcribe the L. Wouldn't please.
Or else you'll go to L.
Hey, hey. I say that sometimes when I get on an elevator. I'll tell the other person. I'll say go to L, and they get a little offended until I point out I'm meaning the L on the button.
Well,
they don't really get it. They just take umbrage.
In reality, you mean they should go to a place they do not win.
I should go. They should go to the lobby. I should just say
lobby.
Go to lobby, but I say go to L and.
Yeah, well, but moving on with our podcast, one last subject at this regular review of the topics, things that have gone in the JavaScript world is the controversy about the semicolons. Michael, do you want to describe what you have followed? Because I was following some comments in Twitter, and everybody's complaining about having or not having semicolons. But so I needed to go back and figure where this came from. But I think you followed it more closely.
Well, it all starts when a nucleoid gets together with a protozoid. The semicolons. There we go. The little that I could grasp from this is that JavaScript will, when it's parsing, will insert a semicolon if you don't have one where it thinks some should be. Where things one should be. There are, well, on the link that you'll post on Brendan Eich's page, there's one particular section or one particular type of expression or a compound expression that you can put together, which is legal syntax with or without the semicolon, and it creates this confusion. If the parser reads it and puts the semicolon in, then the expression reads one way. If you have it out, it reads another way. In and of itself, it's not that big a deal, except there are minifiers. People want to minify their JavaScript, and the minifiers behave differently than parse that out and minify differently than what JavaScript, what someone who is running unminified JavaScript code would expect it to do. So in some ways, it's kind of a much ado about nothing. I would not write code the way that these structures in question could be interpreted. It's not quite the same, but you could say, well, if I write this code, and if you have a multiple compound expression that just relies on the order of operators to work a certain way, and then you took that algorithm and put it on a different system that had the order of operations, had your operators evaluate in a somewhat different order, it's not the same, but it's similar to me in that when I'm writing code, if there's any possibility of things potentially being confusing, I will just parenthesize them, or in this case, I would just say put the semicolon in. I like Groovy as a language. There's no secret about that, and semicolons are optional. I tend not to use semicolons there, but there are some times where I will put one in just to make sure that I'm very explicit that this really is the end of the statement. But I don't use them all the time because I get lazy, but if there was a Groovy minifier and this was ever a potential problem, I would probably start doing it more often. Yeah. Anyhow, that's the real issue.
So basically, who exactly is complaining? Those that do not want to use semicolons, or those that want to make them mandatory? Or
well, it, some of this came out because people reported this to JSmin, the very popular JavaScript minifier, and said this is a bug and needed to be fixed. And Douglas Crockford, who I think is still a maintainer of that, said, no, I'm not going to change it, and it's his choice to do that. It's his project. But it's just created this rift, and I don't quite know why. I would just say if your code might be minified, just write it in a way that it can be minified or not. Just add the semicolon.
Yeah.
That's just me. But yeah, I'm getting old.
Well, personally, I always use semicolons, end of statements. Although if you have a line break, I suppose you are not required. I don't know other circumstances where a semicolon is not necessary by whatever standards define the JavaScript language. Other than line breaks, are there any cases that semicolons are not necessary or optional?
I don't know enough about the syntax to tell you for sure. The link that you're pointing to actually has a pretty good write up on it, and I think someplace that somewhere, I don't know if it was here or someplace else, that it may have been Brendan himself had said something along the lines of, you know, this was a mistake to allow it to do this, to have the JavaScript parser or a JavaScript parser try to insert these for you automatically. But he also says that if it was up to him, he would just fix JS Min to work with this instead of trying to tell everybody to insert their parentheses. He would he would write JS Min.
Is it something that he can fix, or is it complicated and there are reasons to not do it?
Other than arguing
with people.
Well, you can argue that it's when you write code that can be parsed one of two ways. Telling somebody fix this because my intention was for this code to operate this way is not a really good answer. You've written code that happens to parse one way, but when you read it, it could realistically be read one of two ways. So how do you resolve that? Do you change to match the whims or the demands of a small portion of people that seem to be interested in writing code that isn't very obvious to read in the first place? Or do you stay? You say, "Hey, this tool's been out here for a long time. This is how it works. I'm not changing to match or to accommodate these arguably somewhat fringe edge cases."
Yeah, I think this whole discussion has been overblown because you want things to work. Why you make them unreliable just because you do not want to use semicolons? What does it get you to not use semicolons? You are going to save the
terabytes of memory.
Honestly,
this is not the same. The parsing question here, the minification issue, is not the same as what I'm going to say. But I have this argument with people sometimes about parentheses in PHP, or to some degree other languages as well. But just put the parentheses in. Quit being clever to say, if some bizarre ternary, and then on the next line, just have something indented for one thing. Stop it. I don't want to maintain your crap when you do that. I always end up having to go put parentheses in because I need to do something else in that as well. So whether it's I just need to put some logging in so I can test your crap because it's not working because you've moved on. Not that I harbor any resentment against anybody in particular, because I don't. This isn't any one thing. This is just I've seen this for going on 15 years, actually more than that. And it just boggles my mind that anybody would ever do that. But I think in some cases it's almost a religious argument, tabs versus spaces.
Right.
Except that, and some of this I think comes from people, and then maybe younger people, and I'm getting old, so this is maybe my perspective changing. But seriously, because there are people that have made a career out of just writing code and then moving on. They're writing a project, they're writing the first iteration, and then they move on. And then they go someplace else, and they write another first iteration of something, another greenfield project in their new popular language or framework of choice. And they generally don't do maintenance work. And I'm not saying I do maintenance work because it's I love it and it's work that I get and I do it. But there is a perspective that you get on how to write maintainable code when you've dealt with disaster after disaster after disaster from other people's code that is not only not maintainable, really, it's not testable, it's not anything. And the parentheses are in some ways kind of a minor thing, but when they're there, it's just one more thing I have to go do because I have to go put some logging in your condition block. So,
not right, ambiguous code.
Yeah, just it's a code block. Just put parentheses there. But that's my little rant.
It surprised me that the topic was sort of overblown because for several days I saw people commenting on Twitter, and I think it did not end already, and they're still talking about it. And for me, maybe because I develop most code in PHP, and semicolons are not optional. You should put them in most places. So I got used, and it doesn't bother me. It's not. I'm not going to save the world. There, it will not make a difference in the global warming to use more semicolons here and there. But something else to comment in the podcast.
Well, I just real quick here. I think the reason that you were seeing so much in Twitter and Hacker News and Reddit and some other places is because of the names that were involved. You have Brendan Eich and you have Douglas Crockford both making their case about something which I find utterly trivial, but it has an effect on how some people write, and neither camp seems to be backing down, or seemed to be backing down. I'm not sure the status of things now.
So the final lesson is use semicolons and shut up.
I would say so, but that's just me.
Yeah. Okay.
So on
it just seems something of stubborn people, and life is short. We need to move on, and also this podcast needs to move on.
Carry on.
And we're basically at the end of this podcast, and we are practically in the moment on which we comment the latest classes that were published in JS Classes site. Unfortunately, there aren't been many classes to comment about, this is also a good opportunity to remind the listeners and also developers that are contributing or somehow participating in the JS class site to keep sending their classes, their objects, JavaScript objects. Not only we have more subject to talk about, but we can talk about their work and give additional exposure in this podcast. If you have some components that you're probably reluctant to publish or to announce, or maybe you publish somewhere in GitHub or some other code repository and you are not getting much exposure, if you publish them in the JS Classes site, you will also get additional exposure that may be helpful to get more users, more people getting you feedback, and eventually making bug reports or feature suggestions, and making your projects even more useful also to yourself, not just to your users. So on that note, let's just comment on the two classes that were published recently. Basically, there is one it was written by me because I was addressing the need of a friend, but it's also a need that I have once in a while, which is the ability to show progress bars in a way that they appear smoothly. The problem that it's trying to solve is that case that sometimes you need to show a progress bar, and it updates its length in chunks, and it does not look very nice, and sometimes the user does not notice, because if you click the eye and when the bar updated, and using this smooth progress bar object, when the position of the bar, the length of the bar is updated, it is not instantaneous. It will go through all the steps between the current position and the next position that it shows, and gives a nicer effect. And I think it will be useful. People don't probably want to present progress of tasks that are going on their sites in a way that is smooth and more pleasant to see, and the users notice more what they are showing.
Well, that's the difference. You write code that takes time to execute. If you were like me and you just wrote code that just got done, you wouldn't even need a progress bar. It's done. I use indexes on my databases like that. I use a SSD drive. I'm done. But for some of you that need progress bars, I guess, I remember those days.
Well, unfortunately, not all tasks are instantaneous.
Okay, that's
if
a really negative attitude.
For instance, with the file uploads, we know.
If you're going to be all negative about it,
we do not have unlimited bandwidth, and things that take time to upload. It is always good to give progress information to the user. But to make you more, to please you better on that note, one feature that I was about to add is the ability to delay the appearance of the initial progress bar. If the task is too short if after let's say 1 second the task is already done, it won't even start showing the progress bar. So it won't be necessary. But that's just one of the features that I was adding. I just did not have the time yet because it's quite recent. But there are other suggestions, which is something that nice about publishing in a site like this, that once you publish it and many people get to see your work, some people say, this can be useful to me. But maybe it could be useful if it were more if it did something else besides so this.
If it was transparent, maybe. This is the progress. This is the progress lid. Notice we started the podcast here. I got it up to here. So we're about here. I'm demonstrating the idea of a progress indicator. Even in this podcast, we've got it.
Oh, so you folks, are so visual.
Folks, well, you know, when you're good looking.
yeah, and humble.
I should have been born rich instead of good looking. My life would have been a lot different.
Yeah.
So we're here. We're here in the podcast. We're nearly done.
Yeah, we have probably not more than 5 minutes.
Oh, just goodness.
Enough time to comment of yet another class, which is basically a more generic class, which is basically a wrapper around the different ways to implement Ajax in the different browsers.
Oh, the XHR one, yes.
Yeah, which is an object published by, I'm trying to spell his name.
I'll say it. I saw it. I'm going to say it.
You are the expert in foreign names and languages.
Archzilan or Archzilan Eshun Davis. Eshun Davis from Ghana. Hello. Hopefully I didn't say your name too poorly. Sometimes people would say that last part is Davies, and sometimes Davis. Let's pretend that the E isn't there altogether, but I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Oh, whoops. My progress lid has gone away. Okay, carry on.
Yeah. Anyway, just a side note, this is actually interesting to see. We don't see many authors from Africa contributing to this site, so it's always good to see this object by Archzilon. It's also a contributed PHP classes site, and also sent some classes. Some of them, I think at least one, was nominated to the PHP Programming Innovation Award. Anyway, thank you to Archzilon, I think that's the way to spell it, not sure. And I hope we can keep contributing with more components, but unfortunately for this month, that's all of the components we have to comment about. In the past month, there were times that we had too many components to talk about, so I think this month it's in a valley. I hope we get back to the mountains again.
You'll get back to the mountains.
Comment
yes.
on more interesting components. But moving on now, our final section is one that Michael has the privilege to announce the upcoming articles on the JS magazine.
Well, it's always a not sure. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Six or seven things potentially lined up, and we've always got somebody can't do something and last minute things, and we push some things off. But a couple of things I'm pretty sure we're going to have. Mike Schwartz is continuing on his series on his SilkJS project. You go to SilkJS, it's a server-side JavaScript project, and he's actually got an article on building a GitHub API to integrate GitHub functionality directly into the SilkJS server. Probably an article from Kushal Leakey, who's written for us before, on mobile development with PhoneGap. Probably something from Divya Sethia, if not this month, then next month, about image manipulation and HTML5, kind of an overview there. Janine Meyer wrote for us last month, probably this month or next month, an article on doing some live streaming video rotation using JavaScript. I guess I could do that to demonstrate rotation. Artur Sosens. He's doing probably an ongoing. We talked about this before, but I think we're going to get 3 or 4 articles out of him about this. He's doing what I had asked someone to help me with, and then I ran into too much work. But the Gorodki game that I played when I was in Russia last year, he's doing a mobile version of that using Titanium. So that should be in the May issue coming out next week, at least phase one of that. So I'm looking forward to some of these. Actually, I'm looking forward to all of them, but getting some more JS Mag out to you next month. And as always, if you're interested in writing, Artur's and some of the other authors that we have, Dino Gambone, who I actually just did a podcast with recently, has written for JS Mag a lot. He was listening to the JS Classes podcast and became an author for us. So if you think you've got something that you want to share with the world about your knowledge of JavaScript, or indeed you want to learn about something and you want to take some time to research something and write up your research about this is how I learned this and this is how this works, go to jsmag.com, shoot me an email, or just michael@jsmag.com, and we can make something happen. Look at that. I've rolled the thing a little bit more. We're really at...
Yeah, so you're almost at the end.
Oh, we're at the end. I don't know if we're at the end, but we probably should stop.
Well, this was yet another great Lately in JavaScript podcast, and this time we tried something new. I think it went pretty well, this recording. Well, actually, I'll check it later.
We'll see.
Out well. But so far, it go well, and on that note, I'd like to thank you, everybody that is watching, and will be commenting on the podcast. And I hope this Google Hangouts on Air will work better in terms of notification to call people to participate, because we sent invitations to tens of users that joined in the circles of the PHP classes site, which is the one on that is as the account on Google that is handling this recording. This is a feature that is restricted to some Google accounts, and that's why I mentioned that. So if you want to participate in the next shows, just go on Google Plus and add yourself as friend of the PHP classes site account, which appears prefixed with my name, because there cannot be accounts on names of sites, just names of people. So you'll see Manuel Amos, PHP classes, and add yourself as friend, and you'll be hopefully notified next month when Google Hangouts on Air.
You're running out of Pringles lid. We're nearly done.
That's Pringles, though. That's cool.
Yeah. You don't get a physique like this not eating Pringles. Real quick, my wife will probably never watch this because it's nerdy, but I have to say, I had a birthday last week.
Woo!
And my wife got me a couple of really nice things. Well, I don't have it yet. She's buying me a guitar, and which I've been wanting for several years. So I'm getting that. And Sunday, I'm going to the Beach Boys concert in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Woo-hoo!
Was that your birthday?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Beach Boys, baby. Oh, I don't come around all the time.
You are a very happy boy. No.
Oh, yeah. Who wouldn't be happy at a Beach Boys concert?
I can tell.
Oh, yeah. I could sing some of it right here, now.
I'm quite far to go there, so I'm not happy.
Maybe they'll come to Brazil. I'll tell them to go to Brazil.
Well, probably once and while they came. Okay, that's all for now on this podcast. Let me just see if I can try to put the animation to end.
Take us off air.
Bye.
Bye-bye.